Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
The very first one, and I will always remember this, the very first one, me and my teammates, because we're a small team of four, were assigned to work with peccaries, which are just like small pigs that kind of like javelinas.
Fernando Villanueva and his team are college biology students, and they've been released into the wild to research these small swine.
And they're tiny, they roam in these packs of 30, and they just roam around. And we follow them for 3 days, right? And so we're just, we are just looking for them, walking the rainforest. We got lost a bunch of times.
Oh my God.
We found them, we followed them for days. They smell so bad. So they have this like, this musk. They exude and they rub it on everything. All the students get back together and we're supposed to present our results. People will tell us we smell. Like we somehow absorb the smell of these peccaries. It was incredible.
And you were so proud.
Oh, yeah.
Stinky and proud.
It was so fun.
By this point in his life, Fernando knew he wanted to be a scientist. This smelly assignment only confirmed that he was on the right track to studying animals. Little did he know, the animal he'd end up studying, you can find in the mirror. From Colorado Public Radio, this is Quién Are We? Exploring what it means to be Costa Rican, Latino, Hispanic, or however you identify, and diving into the beautiful things that make us who we are. I'm May Ortega. Today, we're trekking along with Fernando as he leaves home to find purpose, to achieve his dream, only to discover something about all of us. Fernando grew up in a place that biologists dream of, Costa Rica. You did grow up in this like wild tropical paradise, and I think Costa Rica is known for its diverse wildlife too. I know there's like a lot of kids anywhere who like to play with bugs when they're little and animals and things like that. So were you one of those kids?
I was a kid that was very much fascinated by all of those things. But I wasn't the kind of kid that actually would go collect bugs.
Oh.
I wanted to look at the bugs and learn about the bugs. Uh-huh. But I didn't necessarily want to touch the bugs. So in that way, I think I'm different from those kids.
Right. Then came a knock on the door.
It's such a cliche, right? Like the traveling salesman that goes door to door and sells encyclopedias. But that actually did happen. And my dad bought this like 20 volume encyclopedia. They're illustrated. And that was, I think, the important part, because when you're a kid, like that's very important. Right? These
pictures.
Things are illustrated.
Yeah.
And they were the best. They were divided by topic. I don't remember all the topics, but I know there was one for invertebrates. And there was one for vertebrates. And those were the two I liked the most.
What is one particular page or maybe an illustration that you would go back to a lot?
I'm pretty sure the section on the vertebrate one about dolphins and whales, it was about to just break off from like overuse. Like I probably opened that way too many times, read it way too many times. Those encyclopedias definitely gave me some like a vehicle to learn about everything.
Do you think then that your dad maybe bought them because you were already such a curious child who wanted to learn about the world?
Oh, yeah. No, you have to understand my dad for that. He was so invested. So I went to public school. There's only so much public schools can do, especially in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know about everything, right? And so I would be upset because the teacher would say something and I would correct the teacher.
Oh!
And then I would get in trouble.
This 2 foot, 3 foot tall kid.
Right. So I would read something on an encyclopedia and then it just would not align with whatever the teacher was trying to teach us. And I would get in trouble for that. And so my dad actually would go and you know, kind of set the record right. And he was really encouraging, right? I think he just knew that I wanted to do so many things and we didn't really have the means for that. So he did his best. He will bring it up now. I think he's still
to
very...
To this day?
Yeah, he's super proud. Because I was right.
So, a pretty solid foundation. Once Fernando got older and the question of a college degree came around, his answer was clear. But it wasn't the most popular decision.
At some point, I had settled on becoming a biologist. My parents were very supportive. Some other family members, less so.
Why? I mean, I feel like that's a job that, like, kind of falls in line with, like, doctor, lawyer, you know, like a highly educated job. Is that not right?
No. No, because in Costa Rica, biologists, I mean, they have a hard time finding jobs.
So. Oh, okay. Okay. So then they would have preferred you do a doctor thing.
I think they would have. Yeah. I recall specifically them saying, can you do something related to biology that actually would get you a job? Like, you'd be a microbiologist. You can be a pharmacist. The other thing that's important to understand is that in Costa Rica, so college education can be free. If you test high enough, Universidad de Costa Rica will take you and they will subsidize most of your education. And different majors have different cutoffs. And so there is definitely a ranking, right? Like medicine, take the highest score. You would take the test and then once they give you your score, you then get to decide. And my score was good enough to go for medicine. And that is actually a problem. I want to take my really extraordinarily high score and apply for the biology program, which requires a very low score. I got into Universidad de Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. I applied to be in the biology program. I got accepted. It was incredible. I remember those years so fondly. Part of the amazing part of it is you get to experience all these different ecosystems. And what happens is they kind of just trust you to just be a biologist. You know, they're like, you're going to go do this and you're going to take notes and there's not going to be supervision. You've been taking classes on how to take these notes. You take statistics so you know what kind of data you need. But no one really tells you how to collect it. And then they just kind of release you.
Then you follow around a herd of little hogs for a few days and return to civilization smelling like pig musk. And Fernando was all about it. Then, during his undergraduate years, he met some researchers from the United States.
There was this sort of big fieldside expedition, and they were studying all these different aspects of monkeys. They were interested in the genetics of these monkeys, and they were there to collect saliva to see if they could get some DNA out of saliva. And after a week, I think maybe I managed to impress them enough and they understood that I wanted to continue my education. And so I got invited to visit. I visited ASU, so Arizona State University, for a few weeks. Got to meet some really cool people. And then I also visited the University of California at Santa Cruz.
These monkey scientists were anthropologists. Fernando started thinking, hey, maybe anthropology would be cool. Anthro's not all that different from biology. He'd always loved animals. Now he would just narrow his focus to primates and humans. Through anthropology, Fernando would get to expand his set of questions. The more he got in tune with his culture and the history of Latinos around the world, the more he wanted a hand in discovering the surprising things that make us who we are. What kinds of foods did our indigenous ancestors eat? What traditions did they practice that have been lost to time? Fernando wanted to ask those things and find the answers himself. Unfortunately, his school didn't have a PhD program at the time. In fact, they encouraged students to further their education elsewhere and return to work in Costa Rica. So he had to make a decision. Leave his home and his family for several years in pursuit of his dream, or end things with a bachelor's and try to find a job there. Also, can we just take a second to point out the irony of this? You've grown up in one of the world's most biologically diverse environments. So diverse, scientists come to your stomping grounds to conduct their research. Yet, if you want to do the same thing, you need to leave that place first. The thing is, for Fernando, a master's and a doctorate were non-negotiable. He knew that if he wanted to spend the rest of his days learning and discovering, he would need those degrees to get a job that would let him do that. So he braced himself for the uncertain road ahead.
Me and all my friends were all sort of like scrambling on these different opportunities we had, maybe trying to make collaborations with people in other countries so they would accept you, which is super hard. You know, Costa Rica, for all its beauty, we're not a very wealthy country when it comes to money. So we didn't really have like any kind of grants that would send you. So we each had to find our own opportunities. So this part, I think, was, I'm not going to say this was sad, but this was the suddenly uncertain part of it, because now I had to apply to grad school. And, you know, it's hard to get in if you're an international student. It comes with these other complications because you're more expensive. You were never considered an in-state student for tuition purposes, so your tuition is twice as expensive. And there's a lot of opportunities that are only for American citizens, and so it's difficult. And because it's difficult, I had to apply to a bunch of different programs. And I didn't get in the first year. This was, you know, it's kind of uncertain. I was working at Office Depot, actually, which was like,
oh, wow.
I was like, well, I guess this is what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm ever going to be a biologist. In the second year I applied, I actually got accepted to one program, in only one program.
Whew,
but it was,
that.
You know, enough. Yeah, yeah, it's just what I wanted.
A master's in anthropology at Washington State University. And once he was in, he discovered that the road to moving up north became a lot easier.
I have found that when you are a student and you're getting a student visa, particularly in a STEM field, I think that really helps because the U.S. kind of wants you actually to come here. So I found that part of the process was really nice. And people were always like, oh, you're doing this. This is great. You're welcome. You know, please discover
Bring
important
your
things.
Bring your brain over here.
Yeah, exactly.
So then you're in Washington for your master's and PhD?
Right. I mean, it was immediately really shocking. There was part of me, I mean, I was so excited, right? Because I finally got to do the thing I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that part has always been great. Like, I've never stepped on a campus where I don't feel like I'm at home. But the immediate sort of like the culture shock was huge. It was kind of lonely. It was sad. Yeah, I miss my family. I miss my friends. The thing that kept me going was just being excited about, you know, being given the opportunity to do what I wanted to do.
But even though he was excited, Fernando was starting to wonder if all that experience tracking pigs in the rainforest and reading those encyclopedias, he wondered if it actually helped him. That's after the break.
Hey, my name's Luis Antonio Perez. I'm the lead producer of Quién Are We? I'm just one of many people who help make this podcast. Representation is something that's extremely important to me, especially as a Latino creator. It's part of our shared mission in creating this show. You can help our mission by just taking a moment to give Quién Are We a rating or review on whatever podcast app you use. It really makes a difference in helping people find the show, and elevating las voces lindas de nuestra gente latina. Thank you for supporting us and celebrating Latinidad with Colorado Public Radio.
Learning about nature and science in the tropical rainforests of Costa Rica had been Fernando Villanueva's passion as far back as he could remember. Then, for his master's degree, he decided to focus on the science of people. And it was more than he bargained for. You spent all this time studying. How difficult was it in terms of the learning, the research, the intensity of the program?
Well, it was good and bad. On the one hand, my undergrad program was extremely good. University of Costa Rica doesn't mess around. Like, they make very good biologists. So I was already much farther ahead, I think, than most other students, which was really helpful.
Yeah.
Except that I went into an anthropology department because I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. and all these advantages meant nothing. Because I had never in my life read a book about anthropology.
Yeah.
And now I'm taking all these anthropology classes and everyone else seems so comfortable. My first year was really hard. I felt like there were years of my life that I felt like were useless. I didn't really feel validated, but that was really emotionally difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think knowing that I really didn't have a choice was also really difficult.
Sure, Fernando could switch his degree to biology, back to something he understood far better. But you see, as he became more familiar with anthropology, he began to notice that there wasn't a ton of research on Latinos, at least not compared to white people. And it became clear that the field needed more scientists like him. So Fernando kept his head down and his eye on the prize. As he learned more, he started focusing on where biology and anthropology meet, genetics. And he did it. He truly earned his master's degree after basically starting the program from square one. Oh, but his journey wasn't over. Next was that pesky doctorate. He knew he needed to stay with his new passion of genetics, and he decided to study that through the school's biology program. After what felt like a lifetime of books and papers, more long nights alone, wishing he was back home, he pulled on his doctoral regalia and got that diploma. He was done. Accomplished. So he started to look for jobs back home in Costa Rica.
Once you have a PhD, Costa Rica doesn't really have the means to support you. The kind of research that I do, they don't really have the budget for that, right? Like, you can be a professor in Costa Rica. Two of my cousins are professors at the University of Costa Rica. I sometimes find myself being jealous because I know how good and how much of a difference you can make as a professor there when it comes to your students. But then they will remind me, you know, don't do that because, like, we struggle to produce our research, right? Because, like, there's no money, right? There's no budget. And what you're doing is a much more higher profile.
So he faced yet another fork in the road. Go home and stunt his career or stay in this foreign country and try to do more with what he had, with what he persevered through sadness and loneliness to earn. For now, Fernando knew he had to stay in the U.S.
So after you get a PhD, you do some, I think, called a postdoctoral fellowship. And I did a postdoctoral fellowship in biology. I was, you know, just going to go back to being a biologist.
Yeah.
Turns out that my particular interests are very much in the middle of biology and anthropology. And so when I was looking for permanent jobs, I got a really good offer in an anthropology department.
That offer brought him to the heart of the Rocky Mountains and a far different place than his lush green home of Costa Rica to dry landlocked Colorado. And you're working at the University of Colorado Boulder, is that right?
That's right. I am a professor, so that is my title. But what I do is I study people. I study people's genes and genomes. So the instructions for life that tell your body how to work, not so much what to do, but just how to be.
Altogether, Fernando has lived in the U.S. for 15 years, three of them in Colorado. In that time, prioritizing the science of Latin genetics has helped him come to terms with his feelings around home. While he's been here, he's met his wife and earned a job that he loves. Most of all, he's making moves for his gente.
I study what makes people around the world be different when it comes to their genomes. I'm a Latino, so I'm very curious about Latinos as well. Yeah. That's something that I always want to know more about.
Fernando is now a population geneticist. That means he has a special interest in the ancient history of the human genome. Now, you may already be familiar with genetics, maybe even your own. Companies exist today where you can send in your DNA and you get back data that lays out your genetic makeup, like where your ancestors are from. When I got my 23andMe, it said that I am 70% Spanish or Portuguese. And I was expecting some Spanish. My last name's Ortega. I think I can be white passing. And it sent me into an entire identity crisis because my parents are from Mexico. My parents' parents are from Mexico as well, but my DNA says otherwise, right, at some point. What would you say to somebody like me who got, you know, their genetic results and maybe like placed a lot of value on that information?
I mean, I would say, first of all, your ancestry doesn't really define your identity. And you don't have to let it define your identity, right? Like your identity is where you grew up, who you grew up with, the foods you ate, right? The traditions that you celebrate, the things that make you happy. These tests are like, they're really interesting, right? They're like an interesting thing you can do, but they don't really have to define who you are. At all.
It's just something interesting about your genome.
Yeah, it's an interesting scientific question. That is pretty normal because the passing of genetic information is not perfect. And so there is tons of biases. Yeah, people's genomes may look very much like one part of their ancestry is like really represented and the other parts are not represented. But it doesn't really mean that, you know, your identity is not represented in that way. It just means that the genetic process is not perfect.
This is just a piece of what his work encompasses. Recently, he made a fascinating discovery that could have major implications for the future of Latino healthcare.
I got to work on this really interesting gene. It's called MUC19, so MUC19. Muck, I think, is short for mucus. It's a gene that is related to mucus. So it makes your snot, I guess, more thick.
Okay.
It makes your saliva more thick.
Okay.
It makes your tears more thick. This MUC19 is interesting in some other ways. So humans carry two different variants of it. One is very much a human variant. When you look at it, it looks human. The other one doesn't look human at all. And when you start poking into it and seeing what it looks like, it looks closer to what Neanderthals have. Wow. And it actually also looks closer to what Denisovans have, which are a whole other species of human.
Wow.
Right? People alive today carry that Neanderthal or Denisovan variant. And it's different enough that it's probably doing something really special. Okay, and that's interesting enough. But then I started to look at, okay, who is carrying that variant? And as it turns out, Latinos, we carry that Denisovan Neanderthal variant in very high frequencies.
Whoa, so, really?
Right, so for some of the populations that I've been able to look at, so people of Mexican ancestry, for example, mm-hmm. it's about one in every three people
Whoa.
Carry this Denisovan or Neanderthal variant.
And how much would a traditional like European descendant person?
Like 1% of people, so one in every 100 people.
What? Fernando did that. He discovered this difference. And it is a big deal. 30% compared to just one? And to be very clear, scientists already knew this gene existed. The discovery here is the difference of how often Latinos carry this gene compared to white Europeans. So what could this mean for Latinos as a whole? We don't know just yet. That's the scientific process for you. One small discovery builds on another small discovery. And after a lot of research, eventually, you might learn something huge. Fernando is still following this slimy trail to get some answers. But this begs another question. Why is this discovery just happening now, when scientists have known about this gene for a couple of decades? Simple. Because researchers haven't focused much on people of color.
Something that I think makes me feel really proud in what I do. Mm. There's a reason no one knows anything about it is because, well, no one was looking at Latinos. Most of the medical data and the genome data that everyone has access to is all European samples.
Yep.
And so if you're not looking into Latinos, then you're never going to find out these really cool stories.
Yes.
And they also might be really impactful. I mean, I don't know what this variant does. It's clearly doing something really interesting mm-hmm. and important. Natural selection is making more of those copies. Like, more people carry it because it's doing something good.
Wow.
And it might be medically important to people, but we don't know what it is.
Fernando's discovery means that scientists can keep asking more questions about what it means. And all those discoveries could change Latino medical care and enrich our identities even more. This is Fernando's childhood love of learning and exploring manifesting in his adulthood.
I think it's important for people to know more about themselves. It's important to people to be curious about it. I know as a very curious kid, I would have loved to know what I know about my own genome now, right? That I would have answered some questions and maybe produce more questions too. I think there's parts of it that can also be really important for us as a society, as individuals. A lot of Latinos, I feel like in a little bit, we tend to feel like orphans sometimes.
Like Fernando. Living in the U.S., feeling so far away from home.
I mean, I always feel good going back. I miss my family so much that I tend to spend a lot of time with them. I try to escape the city as much as I can and just go to these little green spaces. It's not as easy as it used to be once upon a time. I think just I have more responsibilities. I am also like a little pickier, like maybe I don't want to sleep on my back as much or just like...
You can't follow around the little pigs for 3 days.
Right, exactly. I can't do that anymore. But I try to, and it makes me very happy to be there.
The genetics and health of diverse people are still severely under-researched. But he's gonna keep working to close that gap, even if just a little. He will continue to ask questions that others aren't. And he will keep representing his own people. Maybe he'll end up helping many, many of us.
We don't get to lay claim to like a deeper ancestry. And in that way, I feel really good about these tests because people can say, oh, you know what? This is me. Like, I am connected to all these other people in Latin America because we are all the same, right? We all like have this shared sort of ancestries and histories.
And time will tell what else Fernando can discover about what brings us all together. Fernando, thank you for explaining in simple terms what you do and in honest terms why you love to do it. I'm May Ortega. This episode was produced by me, with mixing by Emily Williams. Pedro Lumbrano wrote our theme music. This episode was edited by Aaron Jones and Andrew Viegas. You can find a list of everybody who helped make this episode in the show notes. Quién Are We is a production of Colorado Public Radio.